Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
The parable of the lamps, also known as the parable of the ten, slash, the parable of the wise and foolish virgins or bridesmaids. It's a parable where you read it and you're not necessarily sure what the main point is, and that's why you end up with seven different names for it. Yes. Okay, let's read through it together and then I'll start bringing out some points, maybe, if we're lucky. Then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with the lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight a cry was heard, "Behold, the bridegroom is coming, go out and meet him." Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise answered, saying, "No, lest there should not be enough for us and you. But go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came. And those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterwards the other virgins came also, saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he answered and said, "Assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming." Okay. Before I really get into talking about this parable, I need to set some groundwork. Who here thinks they know what a wedding is?
It's a lifetime of...
You think that's a marriage, Sam? I'm asking about weddings specifically. I'm slightly worried at how unconfident people are about their knowledge of weddings. That might be useful. You see, there's one problem. I know what a wedding is. I went to my cousin's last weekend. It was a lovely wedding. It was everything you'd expect. The bridesmaids were beautiful. The bride was stunning. White dresses, yada yada, rings, kisses, vows, the whole shebang. And there's one major issue, which is a 21st century Christian wedding looks basically nothing like a first century Jewish wedding. So when Jesus talks about a wedding, he's talking about the weddings he sees, not the ones we think about when we go, "Oh, there was a wedding. Oh, I know what a wedding's like." No. And this was really inconvenient, because I was like, "Oh, I'm going to a wedding. I'm talking, doing a parable about a wedding. I'll go to the wedding, I'll keep my eyes open, I'll bring back some nice anecdotes, it'll be lovely, it'll be really useful." Oh, none of what's going on here has any relation to what this parable's doing. So I did what any good nerd does, and turned on my computer, went to Google, and started looking up what ancient Jewish weddings look like. And suddenly everything made sense. So, on the off chance that most of you aren't in fact massive nerds who can find 2,000-year-old wedding traditions interesting, I will attempt to summarise. Okay. Part one of your ancient Jewish wedding. Man finds woman, or woman finds man, and then goes to the parent of the woman and goes, "I want to get married." Father of the bride goes, "Really? If you say so." And then the father of the bride and the potential groom meet. They have a long conversation which basically involves discussing the conditions of the marriage. So effectively what the vows would be, what there would be a gift given by the bridegroom to the bride and her family as a compensation for the fact that they wouldn't have their daughter anymore, sort of. It was kind of, various people had different opinions about what exactly this money was for. What's consistent is The bride would pay, the bridegroom would pay an amount of money, some of which would go to the bride for her own support, and some of which would go to the family of the bride to buy the bride from them or to compensate them for them losing their daughter. That's step one. Once all of those details are agreed, the father of the bride and the groom sign the paperwork, they're now married. That's it. What doesn't happen at this point is they don't start living together, they don't have sex, they do none of the things you think of as being married, but legally, once that paperwork is signed, they are married. This is not an engagement. This is one of the things that is kind of quite important in other places in the Bible. Breathe, Tim, breathe. Remember how breathing works. Sorry. So, there are examples of this throughout the Bible. You can go all the way back to Genesis, and we see Jacob, who wants to marry Rebecca, and works for 7 years to pay for the marriage to Rebecca. The marriage would have been in effect from the day he started that work. The ceremony, quote mark, ceremony, wasn't until after the 7 years of agreed work had been done. But they were married for that entire 7 year period. The marriage was fully legal from the moment the contract was signed. We see this in Mary and Joseph. Mary and Joseph, the fathers of Jesus, were betrothed. But the Bible talks about how Joseph, the husband of Mary, wanted to divorce her. But we can see that they weren't living together. This explains that. They were married legally, but they weren't doing any of the married bit.
I get it.
But he was washing up, though.
No, they weren't living together. None of the washing... Mary would be doing all the washing up for herself, and Joseph would be living probably still with his parents and being useful there. And eventually, Joseph would have got together the payment and given it to Mary and her parents, and then Mary and Joseph would start living together. Step two of the wedding. This could come weeks, months, years later. The groom goes away, gets together the payment, and comes back, gives over the money, and then a date is set when the marriage will be consummated. That means that the sex starts happening. And literally most of that step two is the day will be set, the bridegroom will come with his groomsmen, the bridesmaids will be waiting, they will welcome him in, then he and the bride will go to a private chamber and get married. Yes. So, now they're married. And now that they're fully, completely married, as opposed to just legally married, party! Step three. Party! Party, party, party. And that's what we see in the wedding at Canaan. Whoever the people getting married were, they've had the contract signed, they've lived apart for a time while the bridegroom gets together the payment, that he makes the payment, a day is set, they go off to a private chamber, get married, and then everybody comes together and celebrates the full union of this couple. This is what Jewish marriage looks like. It was a very long process. Okay. You following me so far?
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to read the parable again, and I want you to see I want you to try and work out where in this process we are with this parable. Then, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took the oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight a cry was heard, "Behold, the bridegroom is coming, go out and meet him." Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise answered, saying, "No, lest there should not be enough for us and you. But go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterwards, the other virgins also came, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, Assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. Where in the wedding is this bit of parable happening?
Step two.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Dana. Yes, this is step two. This couple have been married for a time. A contract has been signed. And now the bridegroom has paid the price to claim his bride and is coming to claim his bride. That is where we are in this parable.
Worried about all these extra people.
Yeah. Step two. About cost per head.
Okay. Graham's worried about all of these extra people hanging around for step two. This was one of the things I was going to skip because I didn't want to overload with details, but fine. A number of witnesses would be necessary. They would generally not be in the room. They would be just outside the door to hear the joy of the bride and the groom. We can see this in Song of Solomon. I'm not going to go into the details. If you want to look up exactly what's going on, you can look up what's going on. But witnesses would be present to confirm that the marriage had been consummated, so that when the party then happened, there wouldn't be any, well, are they actually married questions, because there would be witnesses who were there who could go, yes, they are fully married. This was 2,000 years ago. I don't recommend doing it yourselves if that's you're having a wedding soon. I'm not going. Okay. So we've established what's going on in the parable. I want to go back to the very first line of the parable because it tells us what's going on. It's not the kingdom of heaven is like, it is the kingdom of heaven will be like. So will be like, what does will be mean? Will be means Jesus isn't talking about, at the time Jesus is saying, this is how the kingdom of heaven is. This is Jesus going, there is a now, and in the future, the kingdom of heaven will be like this. So Jesus, this is a parable we've just covered about the bridegroom coming to claim his bride. Yeah. Has that happened yet?
No.
I'm going to hope no. If it has, we've all missed it. We're in a huge amount of trouble, and this sermon is completely pointless. So I'm going to go with, no, it hasn't happened yet. No. Jesus has not yet come back to claim the bride, his church. This is not just Jesus' future, this is our future. A time will come for us when the kingdom of heaven will be like this parable. We can see, and this parable is a warning, if we look at the last verse, watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. We need to be aware, we need to be ready. This is not, a day may have been set, but the bridegroom has been delayed. We don't know when Jesus is going to get here. We just know that he is coming. So, there are three distinct groups in this parable. There's the bridegroom, there are the wise virgins, there are the foolish virgins. We have established the bridegroom is Jesus. So we can put Jesus in his Jesus box and we'll look at the other two groups. Okay, so what's the difference? What's the difference between the wise ones and the foolish ones? There's one thing. Let's assume that they have some sort of tradition like ours where the bridesmaids all try to look fairly similar. So they would all be there. They would all be dressed in matching whatever they're wearing because I don't know what 2,000-year-old fashion was. They would all be waiting. They would all have lamps. There is one difference between them. Some of those lamps had oil in. So why didn't the ones that had the oil share? Because what Jesus is talking about is how you get into the kingdom, into the wedding of the kingdom of heaven. So why didn't the ones that had the oil just share it? Surely they would want everyone to be there. But the oil that they had isn't something that can be shared, because what we're talking about is salvation. And so you can't share salvation. On my finger, I have a ring. What does this ring mean?
Married.
Married. Who am I married to? Okay, so this is the ring of being married to Sonia. If I take this off and stick it on Pete, does that mean Pete's now married to Sonia?
No.
Okay. I'm glad you all agreed that that wouldn't work. No. This ring is not the thing that is the marriage. In Samuel, David is anointed with oil that shows that he will become the next king of Israel. If David had got his hand into his hair, got oil and smeared it on someone else, would that have shared the anointing for kingship?
No.
When Lee got baptized, if he'd given someone a massive hug and gotten them all wet with the water from his baptism, would he share his baptism with the person he hugged? No. No. What the oil Jesus is talking about is not a thing, it is a symbol of something within. This ring I wear is a symbol of something within. David's anointing oil was a symbol of something within. It doesn't matter what you look like on the outside. During the day, when the 10 bridesmaids were all out there, they're waiting, there would have been nothing you could see that would separate them. The outside appearance would have been the same for all 10. I'm going to go back to Samuel 2 Samuel 16:7. The Lord does not see as man sees, for man looks at outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. What's inside you is where your salvation is or isn't. And it doesn't matter if you wear the right clothes or know the right words or have the secret handshake. That's not what gets you into heaven. What gets you into heaven is what's inside you. And God knows what's there. If you don't have salvation in you, there is nothing you can do that's great enough. No clothes you can wear that are fine enough. No speech you can give that is powerful enough to get you in. The only thing that will get you into that wedding is being accepted by the bride and the groom. So, the foolish bridesmaids who didn't have oil go, wait a minute, I don't have this. Why did they run off to find it? Why didn't they just hang around and hope that they'd be let in if they were there? Because you've got some with oil. Surely if they're just standing along, they'd be like, I'm meant to be here too. That's not gonna cut it. The one thing that showed who belonged and who didn't was having that light. If you have the light, when the groom arrives, he can go, you belong here. And anyone who doesn't have that light doesn't belong. This bit of the wedding is an incredibly intimate part. There are very few people who would be welcomed in. And that light was what showed who belonged and who did not belong and who would remain outside. And the these foolish bridesmaids weren't so foolish that they didn't realise this. So though it's midnight and there's no chance of them finding anywhere that's going to sell them oil in the middle of the night, still they went to find some because they were that desperate and that desirous to be in that. They wanted to be part of the special moment. So they went, and even at the last moment, they hoped that they could still find what they needed. They hoped that they could find their salvation into that wedding. Because they knew standing around and looking hopeful wouldn't be enough. As if they didn't have the light to show they belonged. It would be better for them to try and strive desperately in those final moments than know with certainty they would be excluded. Are you certain that you are going to be welcomed into the wedding when Jesus returns? If you are, I am glad for you, but look around for those who aren't. There is still time. The bridegroom is still a long way off. There is time to prepare those around us who don't yet have preparation. There are those who are unsaved who can still be saved. There is still time to bring them in. When Jesus shows up, it will be too late. So don't hesitate and hurry and find them and bring them in and anoint them and give them the oil of salvation. because how much better is that wedding going to be if we're not going, this would, but this person's not here, and this person's not here, and they're not here. Don't, who wants to go to a wedding where you're the only one you know? But no one wants to be at the wedding and be like, I'm here because I met that person and I don't know anyone. This is awkward. I mean, I'm glad I'm at the wedding because I want to celebrate this with them, but this isn't as good as it could have been. Bring the people who you want to be with you. Bring them that salvation. Get them into the family. Make them part of this. And if you're here and you're going, I'm not sure if I have that light of salvation you're talking about, I urge you to think about why you don't. The ancient wedding tradition goes, a contract is signed, an agreement for a price is made. Then the price is paid, and the bridegroom comes to claim his bride. And God wrote a contract. God, our Father, set a contract for what it would take for us to enter relationship with him. And that contract said what the price was. And the price was paid by Jesus on the cross when he died for us. The price has been paid for us. But for us to enter into relationship, we have to accept the payment. If we reject the payment made for us, the wedding doesn't happen. A price has been paid to bring you into eternity, into this joyful wedding, into glory. And all you have to do to be part of it is to accept that Jesus died for your salvation. If you haven't already accepted the price Jesus has paid, will you? And if you won't, what is stopping you? There is nothing asked of the bride in this relationship except that she receive the payment made for her. Jesus asks nothing from you to guarantee your salvation, other than you accept the price that's been paid for you. Please, accept it. Be a part of this.